That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
First things first, I'ma say all the words inside my head. I'm fired up and tired of the way that things have been. Oh, ooh, the way that things have been. Oh, ooh. Second thing, second, don't you tell me what you think that I can be. I'm the one at the sail, I'm the master of my sea.
Good morning, 510 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. The Supreme Court and mail-in ballots has been, it's kind of been this thing waiting to happen, and it has still not really happened. But here's what's going on. You've got the executive order by President Trump. Remember this? He wanted to make it so that if a state did not submit a list of its eligible voters to the United States Postal Service, then they wouldn't be able to deliver their mail ballots. They would basically say, we're not going to deliver your ballots if you don't give us what we want. Then the president kind of, you know, there was some pushback, obviously, because the president doesn't have the authority, neither does Congress, really, to regulate how states conduct their elections. And so there were lawsuits filed. And now you have, it's a little bit of a change of the requirements. But the executive order, you know, says that the administration would create these lists of eligible voters and then, you know, tell the Post Service that they cannot deliver these mail ballots to anybody. They can only deliver people who are on the list properly, as in you can't have these massive mail outs of ballots. Like, you know, I used to live in Oregon, and we have, you know, everybody gets a ballot. That's 100% ballot, 100% mail balloting. You cannot go somewhere on election day. It's 100% voting by ballot, by mail. And so, you know, that's a little different system, obviously, than you're accustomed to here, than we're accustomed to here in Florida. But if you're not on the list approved to be a voter, then, you know, you would not get, you know, if you're a citizen or you're not a citizen, you wouldn't get a ballot. Well, this finally brewed its way all the way up to the Supreme Court because you had a judge who would put a stay on this. You have other issues, things like, you know, judges are not supposed to create nationwide stays for things that, and, you know, they're not supposed to step outside of their particular jurisdictional authority. So now you have the Supreme Court was asked to weigh in on this after it got its way through a couple of layers, but not the real case, right? There's always the hardest thing to keep in mind when it comes to Supreme Court cases or even cases in court is there's the quick temporary injunction kind of question, you know, what's going to be done now until the final case is heard and the real rule and the full hearing and the opinion by the Supreme Court is done. And, you know, that might be years. But what do you do now? Some things are sort of preemptively or presumptively put a pause on or a temporary injunction. Other things are not. And so you have the sort of quick docket or the quick decision, and then you have the long decision. This is the quick decision. And it's not even really the quick decision. It's the quick decision before anything has happened. So in a 10-page unsigned opinion, the majority of the court, 6-3, the conservatives versus the liberals, if you want to read it that way. I don't love that way of talking about the court, but that's basically how this one shook out. The majority said that it's too early to tell. The case isn't ripe enough yet because the order itself that Trump wants done hasn't been carried out. And since the order itself hasn't been carried out, there's no harm to the states. And so the states are not in a kind of position of being injured. You know, you have to actually have something done to you before you can bring a case. This is, you know, cases and controversies. You have to have been, for example, torted, which means been harmed. You cannot say, I think this might harm me. It has to actually harm you. So the Democrats, the, you know, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sonia Sotomayor, and Oh, my brain. I'll think of it in a second. Elena Kagan dissented in a 23-page opinion. Scorching, by the way. So here's what the actual rules were. There are three parts of it, and then there are three responses by the majority. The first rule instructs the Department of Homeland Security to create lists of adults U.S. citizens in each state, and then to send those lists to states at least 60 days before a federal election. So this is a U.S. action, not a state action. So DHS is going to make a list of citizens living in each state and then send that list to the states 60 days before the federal election. Second, the U.S. Attorney General is going to prioritize the investigation and, as appropriate, the prosecution of state and local officials who issue federal ballots to individuals not eligible to vote in a federal election. So it's saying that if they believe states are issuing ballots to people who are not eligible to vote in federal elections, those investigations become prioritized, which, again, is a federal action, right? That's a U.S. attorney action. That's not a state action. This is important because the question of who's doing the acting is relevant to whether the Supreme Court is going to intervene and whether the federal government is overstepping its boundaries where the states are supposed to run elections. Third, U.S. Postal Service, the states are supposed to give the U.S. Postal Service a list of voters to whom the states intend to send mail ballots. So, number one, make a list of citizens. Number two, prioritize prosecution of any officials who send ballots to non-citizens. And then the states are supposed to give a list of the people that they're sending mail ballots to. And part of that rule, it's actually kind of a fourth, but it's listed as the three, prohibits the Postal Service from mailing ballots to voters who are not on the list of enrolled voters, and which the Postal Service will create. That's the most contentious one, because now you have the Postal Service intervening in elections and saying who it will and will not deliver mail to. So 23 states, California, D.C., brought a lawsuit, right? District Judge Indira Talwani ruled that she could not review the challengers' claims as they applied to federal elections scheduled after November 3rd because those claims were not yet ripe, okay? But then you had the U.S. Appeals Court for the First Circuit. They declined to pause her order. She does review challengers' claims with regard to upcoming midterm elections right now. So presidential election has to wait. Midterm elections, yes. And then you had the argument, and the U.S. Solicitor General, John Sauer, says, look, the challengers' claims are not yet ready for review. This is representing the government. The challengers' claims are not ready for review because the agencies themselves have not done anything yet. They haven't decided how they're going to implement the order. They're still working on that. So Trump issues the EO. States freak out, rightly so. I mean, the states are right about this. Trump does not have the authority to do this, and it's really weird to imagine telling the post office who they can and cannot deliver mail to, which is the ultimate end of this. It's not the question, though, of whether the federal government has the ability to do this or how weird it is or how wrong it is. It's a question of legal procedure and whether anybody can really stop this yet. And the point that John Sauer is making is our government hasn't acted on this yet. There's nothing for you to stop. There's no injury yet. And you're essentially blocking the government's ability to finalize and implement the president's proposed policies to promote election integrity for the upcoming federal elections in November. You're stopping us from even forming a rule if you enjoin us. And he says every day that that injunction remains in place irreparably harms the government at the start of mail-in and absentee voting in some states is now just a month away. So by stopping the federal government from forming the rule, they're harming the federal government's ability to do its job. Now, it might turn out that what the federal government is trying to do, it can't do. But since you don't even know exactly what they're going to do, you can't say that it's illegal or unconstitutional. And so you can't stop us from making the rule. You're harming us by putting this injunction in. So they challenged, the states challenged and said, look, this would allow the federal government to rush out an unprecedented, legally indefensible voter verification and ballot interception program, which is what this is. I agree with them about that. But that would, among other things, give the U.S. Postal Service far-reaching powers and responsibilities. They also emphasized that the First Circuit had agreed with them, that's Talwani, that the specificity of the EO stated timelines and the inescapable legal requirements and impending deadlines that states currently face in facilitating mail-in absentee balloting for immediately upcoming elections together establish the kind of concrete injury that allows them to sue. I wish I could agree with them because they're right and Trump's wrong. But I don't think legally I can agree with them. I think they are actually in the wrong on the legal question, because all this really involves is the president telling the Postal Service to create this list and then prioritizing investigations by the Department of Justice. And then once all of that happens, then the states are supposed to do some things, but they haven't had to do anything yet. So what the six justices, again, in this unsigned order, decide is all three of the things that this EO entails either haven't come to pass yet or don't involve anything that the Supreme Court can stop. So the majority writes that the first provision, that's the one where DHS has to make this list, that's just an internal directive from the president to a subordinate. That's just the president telling somebody to make a list, not prohibited. Because it doesn't require states to do anything, the majority says they're not injured by the provision, therefore can't challenge it. Like, nothing's happened, so you can't be hurt. The possibility that DHS secretary could implement a provision before November and that states could be harmed by that implementation, they said, is not enough to give states the right to sue. So no standing, because no harm. Not yet. The second provision of the... But again, just keep in mind that what the states are going to argue is, yeah, but if it happens so quickly, it's going to affect the election and it'll be too late to do anything later. Right? That's the kind of the paradox here. Second provision of the order does not harm the states because it just directs the AG to prioritize investigation and prosecution of people who violate existing federal law by issuing ballots to ineligible voters. So it's telling the Department of Justice to prioritize something that hasn't happened yet, and it's a federal investigative power, and so it is their priority, or it is their right to prioritize it. But again, that's entirely within the president's power. The third and final provision, the majority said, orders the Postal Service to initiate the process of proposing a rule that might bind the states in the future. When the states filed their lawsuit, which the majority wrote is the relevant time for determining whether when the states filed the lawsuit is the relevant time for determining whether the states had a right to sue, the order was not a proposed rule, let alone a final rule. Here, too, the majority says, Talwani's conclusion that this internal directive inflicts the kind of injury that would allow states to sue rests on the on the attenuated chain of inferences. I love how the justice is right sometimes. That means it's a very unlikely series of if-thens, none of which has all happened yet. So if the Postal Service's final rule harms the states, they may challenge that rule. So it just isn't here yet. You can't prevent it yet. But the states would not be harmed from putting Talwani's order on hold because the EO doesn't require them to actually do anything. Then you have the opinions written by Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. And basically they say, yeah, but there's no presidential authority to do any of this because the president doesn't have the power to intervene in state elections. So the thing is invalid on its face. Why can't you decide that? Why can't you tell them that, which they did not do? And Jackson writes that the majority hadn't foreclosed states from challenging this blatantly unconstitutional order, which it is. It is unconstitutional by what Trump is doing. But they just can't stop it yet. But she characterized the majority's order as another chapter in, this is a great writing, in the Kafka-esque nightmare that our precedents have been steadily creating for certain plaintiffs who seek to bring election-related challenges. I love that. Anytime you can use Kafka-esque, it's good. That means surreal and bizarre, and you couldn't even imagine it. It's so strange. You know, the truth is stranger than fiction. Plus, it'd be good for you to have read some Kafka. Although the court has for two decades made clear that even valid election-related legal claims can come too late, this is particularly problematic when the government, which controls the timing of proposed and final rules, can easily game the system, which is largely what's being done here. It's happening so late in the game that by the time it works its way through the process, you will have had the elections, which may or may not have had interference from the Postal Service for these ballots. So it's a weird story. And if it's confusing to you, well, I tried to make it as clear as it can be, but it is a convoluted, confusing, weird story. There's also this kind of theory running around that, you know how President Trump, you may have heard once in a while, complain about elections? Like it's his favorite pastime to lie about election fraud claims and to exaggerate things and to continue to repeat things that are false about past elections. The president is often unreliable as a source of information. He is perhaps the most unreliable as a source of information about elections, right? So the theory goes something like this. The president has this fantasy world about elections. He thinks everything's either he thinks or at least he says he's put in place this EO, which is going to create chaos. It already is. It's going to affect the election even if it's not fully implemented. It's going to remain a question of, you know, what these states do and then whether the Postal Service does or doesn't deliver ballots, right? What actually happens on the ground in November is going to matter a lot. And one theory about all of this is that the president, and this is the kind of the wingnut extremist, but you have to still, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility, is that the president is creating a crisis for the sake of intervening heavily and or, I mean, doing some crazy emergency action based on the chaos that his own rules and his allegations about election fraud are creating. Now, I don't believe that's true of the president. I certainly don't want to believe that's true of the president. I'm just telling you what, if you go on any of the more left-leaning websites and read some of the opinions or online, you'll see that's kind of the thing that they're worried about. So where does that leave you as a voter in November? Well, probably not going to be an issue for us in Florida because we have a state that's likely to comply with the president because we're led by Republicans. What about in states led by Democrats? We'll see. So at 525 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, I'm Andrew McKay.
Someone had a birthday.
Yep, 50. Can't believe it.
50 years of wisdom.
Great segue. We have a health reminder from the CDC.
Pneumococcal vaccination is recommended for adults 50 or older. Says here, we're over 6 times more likely to be hospitalized with pneumococcal pneumonia than adults under 50.
I don't love those odds.
Same. Look what I found. Pfizer's Prevnar 20 is proven to help protect adults against pneumococcal pneumonia and invasive pneumococcal disease in just one dose, and millions have already gotten it.
Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you have a severe allergy to its ingredients. A weakened immune system may lower your response. Common side effects include injection site pain and swelling, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138. Visit Prevnar20.com or talk to your doctor or pharmacist.
I'm on Prevnar20.com now, scheduling my appointment.
Good idea. And happy 50th.
Did you know? Florida West Economic Development Alliance partners with local and state stakeholders to compete for companies that are considering Escambia County, the city of Pensacola, and the town of Century. These jobs, wages, and investment deliver real returns for our residents. These outcomes strengthen Escambia County's economy and protect taxpayer interests through disciplined, results-driven economic development. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out how this Thursday morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information about this Thursday morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
ADX Digital Lead, Brian Pravitz.
Digital marketing can be confusing, and with the security concerns and the internet, it might even be a little bit scary. But at ADX Digital, we use Double Verify. This means we only deliver ads to real people through trusted partners on secure websites and apps. No bots, no scams, no funny business. Actual people inside your target geography moved to action through effective planning and professional execution. That's ADX Digital.
No one does digital like ADX Digital Marketing. ADXDigitalMarketing.com.
The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, weekdays 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Tell me that was money. Tell me that wasn't money.
Morning, 528 News Radio 92.3. You know, PJ, yesterday we were talking about the robots who outperformed humans in the 100-meter dash and the standing jump and all the Chinese Olympics. Did you watch any of these videos?
I haven't seen them yet.
Okay, so you need to go online and watch the videos of the robots running into things.
Running into walls? Or?
Yes! So the way I had not seen this part of it, but somebody texted in yesterday that I needed to go watch the videos of. So what happens is, like, the 100-yard dash. There's the one where they broke Usain Bolt's record. There were three robots. One, sorry for my voice cracking. I guess I'm doing puberty again. Anyway, three robots. The one kind of stumbled and didn't do great, but the other two were both faster than his record. But at the end of the race, about another 20 yards down, they had put up a giant blue gymnastics cushion, basically, because apparently they can teach the robots to run. They can't teach the robots to slow down and stop. So the robots then run into this big blue cushion.
Wow.
To stop. I don't know why exactly. I guess also teaching them to turn is not so easy.
Adjust their sensors.
Yeah. So they go running not quite full speed into the and they fall down. And it's hilarious. It's very, very funny. And there's one of the robots who's running and he kind of stumbles and he corrects, which is weird. The weird thing is to watch them stumble and correct. That's amazing. And he runs into the wall, and then he falls. He's kind of stumbling, trying to regain his balance, and then he stumbles, and he falls, and he breaks in half, and sparks fly out of his midsection. It's so satisfying. Then there's another one where one of the runners runs, like, off the track into the right and runs into some electrical boxes and kind of tries to grab them and not fall, and they all fall together. They are absolutely softening us up with these being human clowns so that we're not worried about them.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Closing arguments could happen today in the Lindsey Clancy trial. The Massachusetts mom accused of killing her three little children.
Dr. Kirk Heilbrun, a psychologist, will resume his testimony after yesterday saying that he believes Lindsey Clancy killed her three young children because she planned on killing herself and she wanted to spare them pain. At one point, he also brought up Clancy's Catholic faith, at which point the defense asked for a mistrial, but the judge said no.
Fox's Nate Foy outside the courthouse this morning in Plymouth. Two choices for Iran, that from Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, lays out fresh economic sanctions. It's either complete global isolation or a chance at normalcy with an opportunity to rejoin the global economy. And a Republican Senate primary runoff in South Carolina. The polls open at 7 a.m. Eastern. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31, 79 degrees, and partly cloudy. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. A Mississippi woman is dead after being found in her own car on I-10 in Okaloosa County. The Florida Highway Patrol says road rangers were checking on what looked like a disabled vehicle near mile marker 55 Sunday morning when they found the 73-year-old Moss Point woman deceased in the driver's seat. Crestview Fire Department arrived within minutes and pronounced her dead. The Florida Highway Patrol's Bureau of Criminal Investigations and Intelligence is investigating, but says the death does not appear to be criminal in nature. No further details have been released. Not all doctors agree on Florida's plan to drop four school vaccine mandates. Family doctor Joel Rudman told Channel 3 the debate is not simple.
I think you can find disagreement among physicians. I think you can find disagreements among, you know, health interest groups. Like, for example, hepatitis B. I get a lot of patients that come in, you know, new parents, and they say, look, we've just had a baby. How is a baby going to contract hepatitis B? Generally speaking, you get hepatitis B, it's either bloodborne or it's sexually transmitted. So again, they say, how does this affect a two-month-old?
The rule targets hepatitis B, chickenpox, HIV, and pneumococcal vaccines, not polio or tetanus, which Rudman says will stay required. It'll also widen religious and personal belief exemptions for four vaccines. The Department of Health has opened a 21-day public comment period before deciding whether to finalize that rule.
In our snowbird season, which is typically anywhere from November to March, we were still seeing consistent Canadian numbers. I won't say that they were driving upwards, but there was definitely some consistency in the visitors we were seeing.
That's Nicole Stacy with Visit Pensacola talking to Channel 3 about new Visit Florida data showing a statewide drop in Canadian tourism. The state saw about 721,000 Canadian visitors last quarter, down more than 4% from a year ago and down sharply from the 958,000 who came in the first quarter. Stacy blames inflation and shifting travel patterns, and travel site Kayak is backing that up, showing average Canada to Florida airfare jumped from about $350 to more than $450 in a year. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather
weather update. We are going to be seeing a 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms today. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies with a high near 91 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. For Wednesday, 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms, high near 91. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 77. Heading into Thursday, 70% chance of those showers and thunderstorms with a high near 89. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Right now, it is 75 degrees in Pensacola, 76 in Gulf Breeze, and 73 right now in Milton at 534. Next news is at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Getting out of the military, I was missing this camaraderie.
It's frustrating when you try and talk to people that don't understand.
I would be talking, but I wasn't there with them. You just feel so alone.
I still had the anger, I still had the addictions, but we didn't talk about that.
Came to a point where it's like, okay, I really need to talk to somebody about this.
Family more or less encouraged me, you know, go to the VA, you're a veteran, see what they can do to help you.
When you have family, friends, when you have the facilities like the VA and the Vet Center, it gives me, it gives others encouragement to keep moving forward.
It's okay to go get help. It's okay to talk to people, because it takes true strength to ask for help.
Talking with other veterans was the best method for learning the roadmap to success.
Hear veterans' real stories of strength and recovery at maketheconnection.net.
Okay, let's talk about renovation and how it's not like your ordinary happy ending home makeover show. Example, they're the guys who prey on homeowners and never show up to do the work. So that's why the state of Florida licenses contractors. You can check if your contractor is licensed at the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation website at myfloridalicense.com.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Thinking about buying or selling your home? Don't miss the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10:30 as Wayne Peacock with the Peacock Group is the expert. Get expert advice on today's housing market, home values, financing trends, and what buyers and sellers need to know right now. It's local insight you can trust today at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel with Wayne Peacock and the Peacock Group.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
The primary election is over.
Gay Valmont is joining us now. Hey, Gay, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I know you're going to be representing the Democratic side for Congress District 1.
News Radio 92.3 full team coverage with Chris and Austin provided up to the minute election results.
Joining me now, Jimmy Patronus. Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
I couldn't be any better right now.
I'm looking at your numbers. You have 59.12% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3.
Over the course of the campaign, I know it can be distracting, certainly for us, and I know for you guys in the media and citizens out there, about the sentiment and how maybe negative sentiment and how people feel in social media worlds or circles. The nice thing, and I think it really resonated last night, is the true feelings about Pensacola aren't in all of that online noise, but they really take place at kitchen tables and at living rooms. It takes place when you feel safe in a city, or when your kid is in college and calling home and figuring out that this is somewhere that they want to live. Those are where we make our opinions and form our opinions as citizens as a whole, hoping that we can have opportunity for job opportunity, high wage opportunity for our kids and grandkids. So those are residents. I'm so thankful for them taking those sentiments to the ballot box yesterday, speaking clearly, and I think it sent a powerful and a positive message about our city that we're moving in the right direction.
I love that first part where he says all the noise online, which if you pay attention to it, makes that seem disproportionately significant and representative. And he's exactly right. It's kind of like what I've said many times, that what's happening online does not reflect real life particularly well. If you want it's not that it's false sentiment, although it may be, you know, there can be disinformation, misinformation, malign actors and so forth. It might. And of course, there's a lot of foolish opinions on social media and a lot of fake information that people circulate unnecessarily. That's not the point. The question is whether what you're seeing on social media is representative of what people actually believe in general in a population in real life. And the answer is not just no, it's hell no. It's just not even close. And the reason, lots of reasons, one reason is because you see a very carefully curated slice of even what's all on social media. You know, what Facebook is trying to, and Facebook is the one I'm the most familiar with, but they all operate the same way. Instagram, TikTok, you know, X, all operate the same basic way, which is to some degree more and less. What would be nice is if you could just follow sources and that's all you got, but, you know, it doesn't really work that way. What they provide you in your news feed, if that's how you use it, which, by the way, is one of the reasons I don't really use the news feed a lot. I'll just be honest. Facebook is the only platform that I'm heavily engaged on, and I'll, like, look on the feed and I'll scroll things, and every once in a while I find something interesting, but mostly I find it a waste of time. For me, I use Facebook for purposes of going to Facebook pages of news sources that I care about. You know, like, personally, I like the PNJ's Facebook page a lot better than their website, so I use their Facebook page. Studio 850 is a good Facebook page. There are others. And beyond that, for, like, news purposes, Facebook's not that useful to me, okay? Maybe it is to you. But remember, Facebook is trying very badly to get you to like it a lot. To like sitting on the feed, because as you scroll through the feed, then you're going to see the ads, and the ads are how it makes its money, right? That's the whole game. So they want you to want it, and so they're trying to give you information that they think engages you, which literally by engagements is clicks, you know, likes, reactions, comments, shares, all that kind of stuff. The point is that PJ, who is on Facebook, and I, who am on Facebook, our news feeds don't look anything alike. They're completely different. The algorithm, as we sometimes talk about it, is just a formula. An algorithm is just a fancy word for formula. The formula pays attention to what I do and what he does, and it gives us different things based on what we each do in order to maximize the amount of time and attention that we give to Facebook, and also to, you know, to bore us, because sometimes making it seem bad is actually part of the strategy. But what that means is, you know, when you go to pick up a copy of the Pensacola News Journal, or when you listen to this radio show, or when you watch a Channel 3 broadcast, you get a thing. You get a physical paper that has a set of stories, and it's the same paper for everybody. The 6 or the 10 o'clock news is the same for everybody. The podcast from me is the same for everybody. Facebook is different for everybody, especially if you're in the so-called news feed section, right? If it's in your feed, because everybody's being fed a very different kind of information. And so, of course it's not representative. Of course what you see online does not carry any statistical significance for, or, you know, any really good correlation of what's going on out there, unless you're lucky enough that your past behavior has somehow managed to convince the, you know, AI that runs your algorithm for Facebook that your past behavior tends to generate in your feed a representative sample of all the various ideas that are out there. And I don't think I'm even going out on, you know, it's not even going out on a stump or on a stub to say there's nobody for whom that's true. It's only a question of how off it is. So what happens is, you know, it's like hanging around with people who reinforce your ideas. You're not going to learn a lot, and you're not going to know what everybody believes. You just learn what those people believe. Well, Facebook is a deliberately insular, feedback loop oriented set of perspectives. And I always have to laugh at what Facebook thinks I care about, because it'll sort of overemphasize people that I only know barely, but I have maybe engaged in a prior thing. Oh, that's the kiss of death. It's just like if you search for travel, all of a sudden every ad is travel. If you search for tennis, everything is tennis, right? Well, if you engage with one person one time, it's going to give you 50 posts from that person because it thinks that's what you like. Especially for me, I don't engage a lot of things, and so it's over going to emphasize that stuff. I know in a way, and this is really like mansplaining the internet, but it's important to understand because a lot of people do not. By the way, a lot this morning we're going to talk about Mike Cusack in Milton, who doesn't understand any of this. But that's it's its own story coming up next hour. Trust me, it's worth it. 6, 7, and 8 o'clock. We'll spend a lot of time on this because it's a fabulously entertaining story about Mike Cusack's incompetence in Milton. You'll see. Anyway, so your newsfeed, my newsfeed, they're all different. So we're not all getting anything that's even attempting to be representative of the truth. So your perception of what the people of Pensacola believe or what the people of Escambia County or Santa Rosa County or even of Florida is terrible if it's based on what you see on social media. You're getting the loudest, most obnoxious voices, and then those ones selected for you from, you know, all of the people producing content because they're the ones that are popular or engaging or offensive or whatever that Facebook thinks will keep you on the platform the longest. It's not a newspaper. It's not a TV show, a news show. It's not even an online website that's designed to be, you know, interesting, informative, fact-based, balanced, whatever. But what else do you have to go by? With an absence of perspective, your brain will tend to grab whatever perspective is most available to it. And your social media inputs are the most available to you, especially since most of us, you know, surveys show, spend a lot of time on social media. And what you see there, your brain treats as representative. Your brain treats that as the norm. And what DC is saying is, you know, the problem is what you see on social media bears almost no resemblance to real reality. Elections show something like reality, although, of course, even there, it's only 20% of the reality. Because we don't have any idea what the other 80% believe. They didn't even vote. You also have the basic problem that most people just don't say anything. That's true on social media. Like me, I'm full of opinions, full of analysis. I read things on social media and I think, that's stupid. But what do I say? Nothing. Because I don't need to start 50 fights online today, tomorrow, or ever. In fact, I actually posted something about this yesterday. I just said, there was somebody who said something, even on my page. And I don't even interact a lot with people who say stuff on my page. I just kind of feel like I said what I'm going to say. And if you want to say something, that's fine. If I react back, that's fine too. But, you know, I often say nothing because if I say something, I'm going to be really mean. I'm going to be really harsh. Would you imagine that's within my range? Yes. I do a lot of not saying what I think on the show, in life, online. Restraint is my number one action. But I often think to myself, today's the day, baby. Today's the day that I go full Trump. Today's the day that I let him have it. And I'm like, nah, I'm just going to be a good Christian. But the byproduct of keeping your mouth shut is people don't learn they're stupid. It's like you don't honk the horn when they cut you off, and they don't learn they're stupid, as my wife likes to say. How are they going to learn they're bad drivers if nobody honks at them? Well, yeah, that's true. But also, do they learn that they're bad drivers when you honk at them? No, they just get defensive and then they argue their point even more and they don't learn because most people are really stupid and they're very entrenched in their stupidity. So is there purpose in arguing with them online? Well, you know, no. Otherwise, maybe I would do it more. By the way, today's the day on social media, I stop being nice. Then as an adult, I wait until the impulse passes, which is how I behave most of the time. Okay, and most people are like that. Most people don't even react, let alone comment. So what you see on social media is a teeny tiny slice of even what all the people who saw that content thought of it. And obviously not a representative slice. So this is my very long-winded analysis of why you shouldn't trust the stuff you see online to tell you what other people are thinking. You got to get out and actually touch people, you know, with their consent. You got to actually engage with them. Ask them questions. Have a conversation. Listen to what they say. Because that's the way to find out what people actually think. Now, that's like only, you know, one part of the issue. Because the other part of the issue, that's mostly what DC was talking about. The other part of the issue, or the other application or similarity, is how people show up in these meetings. And you've heard me, if you listen to the show for any period of time, you've heard me say this many times. But you have 5 or 6 or 8 people show up at a county commission meeting, and it seems like a big deal. You know, 20 people who show up again and again, the socialists who show up about flock cameras and data centers and, you know, OLF-8, like they care about that. No, they don't. They just found a cause, and there's a parade. Let's get in front of it. You know, that's kind of their idea. And so they show up, and they talk a lot, and they waste a lot of time, and they say a lot of flamboyant things that are based on partial information and terrible reasoning on the basis of that bad information. But it's very tempting for a commissioner or a city council member to take them seriously and to think, oh, gosh, the people are worked up. And, you know, they have a habit of saying, we represent the people. Yeah, and you have Santa Rosa County, the Pitchfork Posse is doing the same thing. They're not socialists, I don't think, not all the time anyway. I mean, sometimes I wonder. But, you know, they're very agitated people who are very active, and they show up at all the meetings, and they talk again and again, and they frequently claim to speak for the people. Yeah, elections would say otherwise. You know, like there's one person who always says he speaks for the people, and he's lost several elections. And so apparently his grasp of what the people think is not quite 100%. And that's the point. They show up, they get disproportionate attention, and it's very easy to think they represent a lot of people. No, there's a lot of people who do not care. There's a lot of people who have better things to do. And there's a lot of people, frankly, who either don't vote or don't show up at the meeting because they figure it's not bad enough that I need to involve myself. Y'all are doing a pretty good job protecting me from all this crap, all these people. In a certain way, what you might imagine is if, you know, 50 people show up about an issue at the county commission meeting, well, that's also 332,950 people, 333,000 per population ish. But, you know, that's 300,000 plus people who didn't show up. The statistically significant input is silence. 550 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Pensacola Hardware is much more than a hardware store. In houseware and giftware, you'll find luxury candles and detergents, along with the finest cutlery, cookware, and the ever-popular woodware. We have the best selection of grills and grilling accessories for your home and backyard. Oh, and don't miss our great selection of birdhouses, feeders, and garden accessories. Shop local and make Pensacola Hardware your first choice in making your house a home. Come see us, 20 East Gregory Street, downtown Pensacola, where customer parking is always free.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Tune in Thursday at 9:30 as Ray Palmer with Pensacola Sports will be the guest on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Pensacola Sports' focus has and always will be on education, inspiration, and participation in various team, individual, amateur, and professional sports activities. What events are coming up on the calendar? Tune in Thursday at 9:30 as Pensacola Sports will be discussing those upcoming events on the calendar.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Hi, this is Jeff Culhane, voice of the Florida State Seminoles. This is News Radio 92.3, your home for the Noles. Informative, local, dependable.
Hi, Karate. The brisk splash-on aftershave that smooths and soothes and cools.
Well, Andrew, that song's got bad words in it. Sure enough does. That's why we're going to go ahead and cut this off right away. No, I made a version of it. It doesn't have the bad words, but still. Oh, man. You know, that song Added Up by the Violent Femmes is a good example to me of a song where, you know, you have songs that you and your friends listen to a lot because they're like kind of the cool, not the pop things, but you get proud of the alternative stuff that you guys only know.
Yeah.
And then you all memorize all the lyrics and you sing it together. You know, when you're together, that's Violent Femmes is definitely one of those bands.
That's your band.
One of them. But that's definitely one of those kind of bands where you're like, yeah, I know all those words. Broken down kitchen at the top of the stairs. Can I mix in with your affairs? Share a smoke. You know, like, you know, It's how people, Bohemian Rhapsody was won for a while, you know, mm-hmm. obviously because of Wayne's World. There's all kinds of songs like this.
Bob Dylan, too.
What?
It sounded like a little bit like the Bob Dylan lyrics. Johnny's in the basement mixing up the medicine.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I love how you do a pretty good Bob Dylan, though, by the way. All right, 554 on News Radio 92.3. I thought you were saying that people do with Bob Dylan lyrics like the Violent Femmes, and I thought, or, you know, Dead Milkmen or something like that. And I'm like, what? What? Maybe they do. Maybe they did. Anyway, if you are thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are really, really good at this. Four homes a week last year, 206 homes total. So that means a lot of experience, a lot of success. And from that success, you get the experience of having the success and knowing what to do and what to do in the future. And so they just learn how to make this happen. One of the things that Christina always says is, you know, they take over a lot of listings from other agents who cannot get the house sold. And, I mean, they're not going to promise you they can sell every house. I mean, a lot of it's realistic expectations. But also, the experience of success gives them the ability to see the problem that other people might not see. You know, sometimes they're the second realtor, the fourth realtor, the sixth realtor. There was one time she told me they were like the seventh or eighth realtor. And like, oh my God, can you imagine selling a house? I can't imagine selling a house and being so frustrated with even the first realtor. Like, what? You'd be pulling your hair out. And if you go through two or three, oh, good Lord. Like, you'd probably just take the house off the market and quit. But some people are so persistent, and then they bring it to her, and she's like, hey, we can sell it, and they sell that, and okay, fine. You may have people you want to have on your list of potential realtors, and that's fine. Somebody you know, you go to church with, whatever, your brother-in-law, that's fine. I'm just saying include that person and then include Christina and talk to them and make an adult decision because it's a big deal. It's a lot of money you're talking about and a lot of long-term consequences for you. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. 555 on, by the way, you know, somebody had texted in. They were very excited that I was talking about the robot crashes because this person was the one who suggested it to me yesterday to watch the robot crash video. Yeah, I love it when you guys suggest stuff to me. I love it when you disagree with me. I you know, I mean, it feels kind of nice when you do agree. I'm not going to lie, you know. Hey, Andrew, that's such a smart comment. Aw. But when you, I long ago learned that when people agree with you, you don't learn much. Right? I mean, how are you growing? How are you getting smarter? How are you acquiring anything? You know, reinforcement is, I mean, it's sort of nice, but you really grow through disagreement. For me personally, that's what I've experienced, is you grow through disagreement. First of all, you gain perspectives you may not have had before. You know, somebody says something you weren't expecting. That's great. Oh, all right, a move I hadn't seen. But then in defense or response to that move or in assessing the validity of that claim, I've acquired some of the greatest insights, things I really cherish, and actually as a result of losing arguments with people. You lose arguments? Of course, everybody loses arguments. You know? Think I'm the only person with facts and reason in the world? Of course not. But that makes you grow. And so anyway, I love when people disagree. I love when they challenge. I actually tend to be kinder to people who disagree with me precisely because I know it's kind of hard to do that. Not always. You know, still there's a part of me that wants to lash out at people. 437-1620. Oh, this is fascinating. PJ, are you a screenshot guy? Do you take screenshots of things
lately,
you see?
I've been taking lots of them.
Okay, and why do you do it?
To remember.
There you go. Because you, it's like instead of writing it down, you take a screenshot, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Study shows taking a screenshot sabotages your memory.
Oh.
Their study indicated that what people think is I'll screenshot it, I'll remember it better. What actually happens is I screenshot it so I don't have to remember it. It's safe in my phone that I'll never look at again. Most of the time, a lot of times. But you turn off the memory processing function of your brain because your brain thinks, oh, it's solved.
But you need your memory to remember you took a screenshot.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And then, they did a study comparing people who took screenshots and people who didn't take screenshots of artwork mm-hmm. and then asked them questions later on. And the people who took the screenshots barely could remember anything of what they had actually seen, even though they had both seen it. And so the theory goes, you know, if you actually want to remember something, don't take a screenshot of it. I do it a lot as a reminder, like I am going to look that story. It's news stories typically. Oh, that's interesting. I want to look that up later, but I don't have time right now. So that's why I do it. But again, it makes sense. It's kind of how if you outsource something that your brain does, like know things to, say, the internet and Wikipedia, then your brain learns, oh, I don't have to remember stuff anymore. And then you don't. And if your brain outsources memory about facts or stories or information or a recipe to a screenshot, then I don't have to remember it anymore. Interestingly, the studies seem to indicate that if you take photos of activities you're engaged in versus photos of, you know, facts or things you saw online, screenshot type stuff, the photos of events you enjoy is more likely to stay in your memory because you're doing them as a keepsake, as a memory enhancement. You're experiencing it and enjoying the experience and trying to remember it, and you're doing it to enhance rather than to replace. But I will also say, from my own experience, it's not statistically, like, there's no study on this, I find that I remember things a little bit better in real life if I just put the phone down and watch them. I experience them better. I always say this about the air show. Just watch the air show. Don't take photos. You'd be better off. But I've noticed, actually, you know, the thing in real life that I remember the most is the photo I try to take and fail at, and then I'm frustrated I don't have the photo of it. But my brain has really vividly remembered the thing I'm angry about not having a picture
of. Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 9.